For the purpose of a state facility closure hearing on the Westside Adult Transition Center. Our co-chairs are not here, so I'm going to fill in until Senator Schoenberg arrives. I'm Representative Elaine Nekritz, and the clerk shall call the roll.
Representative Bellick, Senator Frerichs, here. Senator Murphy, Representative Nekritz, yes. Representative Poe, Representative Riley, Senator Schmidt, Senator Schoenberg, Senator Severson, Senator Trotter, here. Representative Tryon.
Here. I'd like to add Representative Murphy to the roll. Senator Murphy, like I'm in a zone here. All right. So we have five members answering the roll. All right, so we will proceed with the agenda. I'm hoping everyone has a copy with that. We will proceed with the representatives from the executive branch and the Department of Corrections, as well as the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Once we do that, when we start into the regular testimony, we will have a time limit on everyone. We do that routinely at these hearings, and there will be a display, an electronic display, in front of all the witnesses that will go from green to yellow to red. When it turns red and it starts to beep, your time is up, and we appreciate it. It's just, you know, to keep the this. We have a shorter hearing today, so we can probably be a little bit more lenient on that. But you know, we try to get everyone an opportunity to speak and be heard, and to make that as fair as we possibly can. With that, we will turn it over to the Illinois Department of Directions, and we have Director Godinez, Brian Gleckler, and Ann McElroy. So I don't know, Austin Bates, who's also with the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, who I don't know who's going to be starting first. We'll leave that to you guys. All right, Mr. Bates.
I'll start first. Good
Mr. Bates, is your microphone on?
Ah.
There we go.
Ooh.
Thank you.
If major changes are not made in these areas, more services and programs will need to be reduced. We call this the squeeze. For fiscal year 13, the governor introduced a GRF budget of $33.9 billion. This includes a 9.2% reduction in the budget for the Department of Corrections. Just a week and a half ago, the Illinois House passed a resolution to cut an additional $14.2 million from public safety, which could result in even deeper cuts to the department than proposed in the governor's budget. In the face of budget reality, the proposed closure of Westside Adult Transition Center makes financial sense. We have worked closely with the Department of Corrections to identify efficiencies in order to manage the budget. The low-risk, minimum-security offenders housed at Westside ATC are already back in the community, working, going to school, receiving community-based services. The department will continue to ensure public safety in a more cost-effective manner through electronic home detention. The cost of operating Westside ATC is over $60 per resident per day versus an average of $5 per day on electronic home detention. This closure will save the department over $3.1 million in fiscal year 13. I'd like to turn it now over to Director Godinez, who can provide you more specifics. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, honorable members of the Commission, and distinguished legislators. For the record, my name is Tony Godinez. I am Director of the Illinois Department of Corrections. As Mr. Bates touched on, the state of Illinois is in very tough fiscal times, and action must be taken all across government to restructure and stabilize the state's budget. Decades of inaction and irresponsibility in areas such as pension and Medicaid has brought about the need for deep budget cuts throughout all of state government. The Department of Corrections faces nearly a $112 million funding cut for fiscal year 13 in the governor's introduced budget. Given recent action in the Illinois House, there are projections that the $112 million cut may run even deeper. With approximately 86% of the department's budget spent on operating facilities, it is the unfortunate reality that among other cuts, facilities must close and some employees must be affected. The decision-making process in regards to facility closures was multidimensional. When my staff and I evaluated facilities for closure, we tried our best to keep the impact to families and communities to a minimum. To that end, we expect to offer vacancies throughout our system to many of our affected staff. In addition to examining the effect on employees and their families, my paramount concern when examining potential facilities closures is the protection of public safety and the security of my staff and the inmates. Balanced with the priority on safety and security is my goal to provide a correctional environment that better prepares our offenders for reentry into society. By closing the Westside Adult Transition Center, the cost savings are clear. The cost of electronic home detention averages $5 a person per day compared to over $63 a person per day at Westside ATC. This will result in savings of $3.1 million in fiscal year 13 and approximately $4.3 million on an annualized basis. The proposed closure of the Westside Adult Transition Center is based not only on the cost savings to the department, but also based on sound public policy. Low-level minimum security offenders can be managed in a more efficient manner without increased risk to public safety or compromising reentry initiatives through the use of a community-based model of electronic home detention. The Adult Transition Center offenders are already allowed supervised movement in the community to work, attend school, and receive treatment services in the community, and the benefits of an adult transition center can be replicated at a reduced cost through electronic home detention. I feel, based on my 39 years of experience, which includes work at a couple of dozen other state correction systems, a community-based model for low-level offenders fits in with customary industry-wide practice. The program will provide offenders a controlled environment that will lay the groundwork for a smoother reentry to society and lessen the strain on families whose loved ones is sentenced into the prison system. In closing, given the department's projected funds available the next fiscal year, I see the closure of Westside ATC as a wise decision in light of the projected reduced funding to corrections. I respectfully ask the Commission and your colleagues in the General Assembly to join me in supporting this decision for reasons I have laid out. Thank you, and I invite any questions the Commission and legislators might have.
Thank you, Director, for your testimony. I'd like to also acknowledge the presence of Representative Ford. Welcome, and we're delighted to have you here. Are there questions from members? Representative Tryon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Director, maybe you could give me a profile of what a low-level offender is and kind of a snapshot of what the sentence that they're fulfilling would be.
Well, profile department-wide, it's...
I mean, what kind of crimes are we seeing?
Well, department-wise, I believe 42% across our department are individuals that are doing less than 1 year remaining on their sentence. Of that 42%, numbers-wise, there's probably 8,000 offenders in our system that were committed for Class 3 and Class 4 crimes, the lower-level crimes, the non-violent offenses.
Like theft over $5,000 or something, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Or car theft or something like that?
And some car thefts are, I believe, lower-level.
You know, I'm somewhat familiar with the cost of secure detention, at least in a county jail situation, having been a former county board chairman, and $63 for any type of secure detention seems awfully low to me. And I assume that's because you're not you don't have the level of employees there for any kind of therapy services or anything like that. Would that be correct?
That would be very correct, among other reasons. There are individuals that wouldn't have long-term medical needs that would not be eligible to be placed in an ATC, so that takes away the need for those high costs of medical attention.
So the staffing there is minimal security, and then whatever housekeeping is done and food preparation, that kind of stuff, currently?
Yes, sir.
The operations. So also, $5 a day to me sounds pretty low for in-home monitoring. I mean, I don't know, how did you come up with that figure? Was that just what it cost that person? Does that include administrative costs? I mean, there has to be some administrative costs that I think that sounds low. I mean, I would think administrative costs would be $5 a day.
I'm going to ask Brian to answer that fiscal. I just want to point out that it actually could be less than that because the inmates share the cost of that equipment. So, Brian.
Yeah. For electronic monitoring, the department currently has a contract with a vendor that provides the monitoring devices. And those costs range from $1.95 per day all the way up to approximately $10 per day, depending on the level of technology that you choose to utilize per offender. We averaged we use the assumption that we would average about $5 per day per offender based on the device. Now, yes, there are our existing parole staff would then supervise these individuals while they're out on electronic detention that we're already paying their salary. So that's not factored into the $5 per day cost for the actual electronic detention devices.
So you're looking at just the devices. What kind of when you're looking at this type of a population and you put them under electronic home monitoring, what type of incidences and responses are you required to go? I mean, I'm sure somebody tries to take off their bracelet occasionally, or they leave the facility. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, we have graduated sanctions for the seriousness of whatever that violation is. If you're not where you're supposed to be, and that's your first time, the determination is made up through the deputy director of the region whether or not this individual goes back to prison.
So it would be
please
return
remember,
them back to.
We are picking the best of the best. These are individuals that are the least risk that may already be employed in the community. Those that are in ATCs across the state.
Okay. So we're not going to be releasing any people who are convicted for violent crimes, murders or rapists, serial rapes, anything like that? These are
those individuals,
very low-level felony
those crimes. Individuals wouldn't qualify for the electronic detention, even statutorily.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Senator Schoenberg in the chair. Senator Frerichs.
Thank you very much, Senator. I have some questions regarding overcrowding. In your proposal, you say inmates not eligible for electronic home detention will return to other correctional institutions, and accommodation of these inmates will not present an issue. Is your state prison system operating historic high levels of population right now?
Yes.
Okay. Speaking in terms of our state's prison design capacity, how overcrowded are the state prisons right now?
Depending on what percentages that you've read, I believe we're at 140% over what was the buildings were built for.
Okay, so for 140% over, and the legislature accepts your plan to close two prisons and six adult transition centers, barring any new plan to reduce prison population, how overcrowded would the system be then?
Well, there's a side answer to that, and that is our population has started to decrease. We are 2% less than we were even a year ago.
Okay.
And the beds we never counted into our capacity were the ATC beds. That's 1,200 beds that were never into the capacity numbers. So those are, we believe we will have enough space for everybody. And the other thing, too, is that I want to point out is that our effort is to again, reenter these individuals, least risk individuals, and down the road, those individuals on parole get discharged for good behavior. That increases our ability to supervise these individuals.
Okay, but if we're 100%, 140% at capacity now, you think there's going to be such a drop-off that we get to 100% capacity, or you think the 140% capacity is acceptable?
I mean, I
see in your packet here that a slight projected decrease from 48,781 to 48,620, but that's not really much of a trend, and if it continues, it's basically leveled off.
No, we have gone 1,000 inmates less than 1 year from our projections, and we believe that that number is going to go lower. Our commitment...
1,000 less than projections, not 1,000 less than actual from the year before.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We projected 49,200 at this point last year. We have 48,200 this morning.
Wait, that's
I'm sorry, 48,196 to be exact.
Okay. Well, let me talk about something else. In commenting on the impact on service delivery, your report says the service delivery will not be impacted to those ATC inmates transferred back to correctional facilities who are not eligible for electronic home detention. Has the extreme overcrowding made it difficult to access programs like drug treatment and education in our state prisons, or does everybody get the programs they're requesting without waiting?
As far as the availability of programs, it varies by facility. And as part of the budget reductions that are included in this budget proposal for fiscal year 13, it does assume a reduction of approximately $13 million in programs. So there could be fewer substance abuse treatment programs that are available at certain facilities. That is another area of our budget that is going to be impacted.
I think the proposed fiscal year 13 budget cuts substance abuse treatment and vocational education by $13 million. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. So is it true that ATC residents who currently access these programs and also hold jobs won't see any impact when it comes to accessing services if the ATCs close?
Some will. Some that are not eligible for the ED, under the ED criteria, the electronic detention criteria.
Okay. What are the population management initiatives you allude to several times in your proposal? And what is your time frame for them?
Well, we began probably as about 7 months ago looking at how we place and why we place individuals in segregation, why we take the amount of time we revoke time from individuals, why we don't restore time for to individuals that have shown good behavior through the years. These individuals have not requested for the review. We have automatically placed reviews, and that has allowed some of our prison inmates to be released. They have not been released early. They have gone past their minimum supervised release date. That's one of the management population controls. The other one is we took a serious look at what we return people for. Many of our returnees were returned for technical parole violations. We reevaluated our sanctions and are using more community supervision sanctions than we are just returning people to prison, which is going to be an automatic, I believe, 6-month stay before the Prisoner Review Board, and a plan is put in place to return them to the community.
Okay. And sort of the philosophy, wouldn't you think that having some of these successful programs would reduce the amount of people reoffending and ultimately reducing the prison population?
Absolutely. But it comes down to what are the most successful programs that we can afford.
Okay. Do you have any concern that doing away with these programs will drive up recidivism and ultimately increase pressures on the system?
Of course I have concerns that, but I believe that if we focus on those individuals that I talked about, those 8,000 that remain constant that are or that 42% that are coming out in a year, we focus in the institution on that population that are coming out soon and give reentry instructions and directions at the prisons where they're at, that I believe our numbers will steadily decrease in terms of returning.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Trotter. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. This number 8,000 that you keep referring to, what is the number? What are you extrapolating in reality of how many will actually be on this monitoring program?
Oh, that's two different questions. The number 8,000 is drawn from my information as of January 31st, 48,662 inmates in corrections. Of those having 1 year left to serve on sentence, there are 18,758. Of the 18,758, 8,100 are Class 3 and Class 4 offenders.
So it's 8,000 that are eligible for the program. How many do you actually believe will be impacted by this new plan?
Now, statutorily, they may be eligible for the program, but we've put in place more criteria than the statute allows. We have looked at past records of violence, any past records of certain offenses that we've knocked out, DUIs we've knocked out, certain offenses. So it boils down to we probably have a pool, an eligible pool of close to 2,000.
2,000, okay. So that, to me, at least, it begs the question, what is the difference in this plan and the plan that didn't work before about early release, the early release plan that the department put forth about a year and a half ago or so?
The short answer, Senator, is that the previous plan didn't stick to the main tenet of the law, in that it didn't fully recognize behavior as opposed to time left to serve. This is totally behavior-based. It's not just because you have X amount of time left.
So what defines, I mean, what kind of behavior does this category represent?
Well, it's twofold. It's what time you have into the system,
okay,
what you've done while you've been in the system, and then what time you have left in the system.
So what will nullify me from being, not me necessarily, since you haven't caught me doing anything, what would nullify someone from being eligible? When you say their behavior.
You could have 7 months left, and we're involved in disciplinary infractions in the last year or so. We may decide not to take a chance that this is not a person. And some of these individuals would still be eligible for an ATC placement, but they would not be eligible for electronic detention placement.
But it sounds, at least to me, it sounds very arbitrary of how you do it. I mean, but I'm asking, is there a specifics? I mean, what have you detailed to make this successful versus the last early release program that we had?
Well, there are two very different programs.
Okay.
To answer your question, yes, you have the statutory criteria, and we will submit to you the additional criteria that we will place on these individuals. That will make it very specific as to who would be eligible.
Yeah. In looking over the Adult Master Planning Study, it's from September 28th, 2007. Is this still the plan that you're looking at? Is this still a relevant plan?
I don't know, Senator. I don't know. I'm not familiar with I'm not familiar with that document.
It's the Illinois Department of Corrections. You haven't seen this plan?
No, sir.
How did I get it?
I'm sorry?
How did I get it? I guess I'm asking staff or...
Is that part of the packet? I'm sorry?
It's the PSA Dewsbury study, dated September 28, 2007.
So you're not functioning or operating, or this plan that you have now that you're putting forth has nothing to do with this 2007 plan?
No, sir.
So there's no relevance to this? This is
not in relation to this ED proposal, no.
I have no more questions. I guess we'll talk later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, so the document that Senator Trotter was referring to is a September 2007 study by DS, PSA Dewberry project number 5000050775. It was through a it was actually a federal grant. It was supported by a federal grant that was administered through the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority. So you're saying this work product is no longer relevant?
It's not relevant in terms of this proposal and our management, our population management plan. No, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I want to understand the population numbers a little bit. We've got this document here that indicates prison population, or it says IDOC had an operational capacity of 48,633 beds, with 45,481 set aside for males and 3,152 for females. Is that the number of overall beds in the system?
No, sir. When facility to facility, we came up with 51,043 beds. In addition to that, if you add the ATC beds available, that's 1,200 beds. That's 52,243 beds.
But without them, you're at 51,000 some odd beds?
Yes, sir.
And what's the population?
This morning was 48,196.
So how are we at 140% of population if we have more beds than we have people in the system?
I believe that percentage comes from the beds that they were designed to hold, the rooms that the cells that they were designed to hold. Many of those cells were one-bed cells,
and then,
that we have made two-bed cells.
Okay. So when we talk about operational capacity and the 51,000 number, that'll include segregation, medical, that'll include everything.
Absolutely.
And those are not necessarily always full to that extent.
Absolutely. We have a segregation cell block in Pontiac that's empty that has over 100 beds.
So how many design beds are there? How many beds was the system designed for?
Do you know that?
Separating out
approximately 34,000, I believe, was the figure that's been given, under 34,000.
We've got a third of the beds in the system are not designed for regular population.
That's possible. That's possible.
Is that typical in other states to have that high a percentage of our beds be for, you know, the atypical, I guess, prisoner?
Senator, I think the figure that the 140% figure you're referring to is the rated capacity, the figure. And even prior to the recent population spike, when we were operating with about 45,500 inmates, and we were, that population was level for several years. We were operating even at that time at between 130 and 133% of rated capacity. So operating above 100% rated capacity is a normal practice for the Department of Corrections, and not just in Illinois, but in other states as well.
Has there been any consideration to assessing whether you need 17,000 beds that are, you know, or a third of your beds in this, you know, segregated and medical and whatever these sort of specialty units are that affect this rating? Is the space being optimally used if you have such a large percentage in this one third that we're calling the other two thirds being so dramatically overpopulated?
Absolutely, and that, let me allude back to our management population management plan. As I stated earlier, we're taking long, hard looks at how we do segregation. We have already knock down our population and segregation by a significant amount to we are now converting segregation cell blocks into general population.
How many of those 17,000 beds are currently occupied?
Senator, the 34,000 bed number, the 17,000 beds could be many of them, most of which would be general population beds. They would not be specialty.
They're like the doubled up beds?
Exactly.
Some of them? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. I understand. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, members of the commission? Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll momentarily skip over agenda item 3 to agenda item 4. Mr. Baer, is he here?
I'm Mr. Baer.
Henry Baer had planned to be here. I don't think he's missed a COGFA hearing since you guys started your series of hearings in the fall. He was unable to make it back up from Springfield. So I'm Ann Irving. I'm the policy director with AFSCME Council 31. I'll be testifying in his stead. I want to just walk you through some of our basic concerns about this plan. And I first want to address this issue of the impact on the employees, because it's the obvious reason why a union would be talking to you, right? So I want to say that this plan, as the other correctional plans presented by the department, references the number of employees working at Westside ATC. Then it says there's going to be more than 500 positions available that will be offered to those employees, and it sounds like everybody will have a job. But if you read the fine print, the department also makes clear there'll be more than 700 layoffs in the Department of Corrections if the planned closures go forward, only 500 available jobs. Clearly, some people will be left without positions. So that being, I want to get that out there. But now let me move to the policy concerns about this program, which you guys have already asked questions about and alluded to. So it's presented as we could pay $5 a day for something we're currently paying $60 a day for, and wouldn't it make sense to just pay $5 a day? But it's important to note that the program as envisioned in this plan is not to, A, move all the ATC individuals currently residing at the ATCs out into the community on electronic monitoring. They aren't all eligible. As was noted, you have to have less than a year on your sentence, and you can only be put on electronic monitoring if you meet certain other criteria. So our estimate is about half the individuals at the ATCs now will be returned to correctional facilities. That's not going to cost $5 a day. That's going to cost more. And, as was alluded to in the questioning, given the overpopulation at our state prisons, given the reduction in staffing at our state prisons, as population has gone up, we've actually seen a reduction in staff. We have fewer programs available at correctional facilities that provide the kind of interventions that are needed to turn people's lives around. So the folks who have to go back to correctional facilities and the folks who could have moved out to an ATC, but now almost all the ATCs will be closed. Keep in mind, Westside is one of six that are being closed. There will only be one ATC left in the system. So there are folks who are not going to have the opportunity now to step down from a correctional setting and into the community. Beyond that, we have this, $5 a day in the community. And again, it's been referenced already. That's just to pay for the bracelet. The program says they'll be able, the folks who are out on electronic monitoring will be able to access programs in the community. What programs? Where's the funding for that? Because it's not presented in this plan. And furthermore, the ATCs provide an opportunity, as I just referenced, for folks to step down from a correctional setting. They are in a situation where they're still in a residential facility. They're reporting every night, but they're out working. And they're working because DOC staff places them in jobs, helps them find jobs. And as they're working, they go out to work every day, they come back at the end of the day. And it provides a step down into a greater amount of freedom. At the same time, there are supports, not just security supports, but programmatic supports. The concern is that if we essentially abandon the ATC system, which is what's being proposed here, again, only one of the seven will be left open, thousands of inmates won't have access to that step-down experience, and you're therefore going to have people who are thrust back out into the community without the supports they need. They won't get them in the correctional facilities. They're simply not available. And, in fact, those that are available are being cut this year by $13 million, as you just heard. And people on electronic monitoring won't get those supports either. So, in the end, you know, we just talked about, we have a hugely overpopulated system. We don't have the services we need now in that system. When the director says, you know, his first concern is safety and security, our numbers show we will be at 154% of design capacity, a hugely overpopulated system, at the end of all of this two correctional facility, six ATC closure process.
Please proceed.
And the lack of programs, as the director essentially admitted to you, the lack of availability of exactly these kinds of job placement, substance abuse, counseling, life skills programs, the lack of those programs will simply drive increased populations into the future. So That's the policy concern about this. So we hope that you'll consider what the long-term consequences are for our Department of Corrections if we go forward with this.
Thank you. Representative Nekritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the larger context, we clearly don't have enough money to fund state government the way it's currently operating. So rather than just saying no, what are your alternatives?
I think you've heard Director Baer on a number of occasions.
You know, he pretty much just says no. I've heard him, and I'm a little surprised he's not here, because I was with him last night at a pension forum. He's for more revenue.
Exactly.
Okay, I get that.
Right.
Okay,
no,
but that's
dialect,
not okay.
But it was
that's
no.
Because at a certain point,
that's just not a realistic, politically realistic or practical solution.
Right.
At this point.
But so what's the alternative? Right. What's being proposed here by the Department of Corrections, you know, and again, they're saying they have to deal with a 9% budget cut. Well, once you're dealing with that level of cut, this is not a realistic solution either.
Then do you have an alternative that you're willing
to... Yes, revenue.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Tryon.
No, I'm actually not familiar with the terms of any of the bargaining units' contracts. That's certainly something that's the function of the executive branch and not the function of the legislative branch. But, you know, it's not uncommon to put in a contract reopener in the event that certain performances of budgets aren't met, revenue doesn't come in. In any of the contracts which you bargain, are there any contract reopeners that might suggest that you may wish to come and sit down and have a discussion about changes in the contract versus, you know, facility closures and layoffs?
You're talking to the policy director. I don't bargain contracts. So I will tell you we're currently in negotiations with the state. But our contract is open right now. We're negotiating. But I think what the bottom line here is, again, what we've seen is not that what's driving the concern in state government right now is not that there have been huge increases in Department of Corrections payroll over the last 12 years, and that's causing a crisis. That's not the issue. In fact, there have been fewer and fewer staff in the Department of Corrections. So at the same time, we've had increased population. So I guess, again, we have to return to what's the problem in order to figure out what the solution is. And I don't think employee payroll is the problem here.
No further questions.
Senator Trotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning.
Payroll isn't the only problem. It's a multifaceted problem that we have here in the state of Illinois. So it's not just corrections, and I've said this before, it's how we fund pensions, it's how we deliver health care. I mean, it's a multifaceted thing. And we've been given the mandate to try to do things differently and how we spend our monies and how we provide services to folks. And I'm not real good with math, but in looking at $5 a day versus 63, I think that's 12 times 5 is like 60. So we're saving. There is a savings there. And it's a better way to deliver service. And I think this is what the department was looking at and trying to do. And then there's some of us that say, many of these folks shouldn't have been incarcerated in the first place. Mm. It was because of our draconian idea of how to get tough on crime that we have these folks who don't even need to be in the system. And we're trying to find a real transition back to the community so they can be with their children, so they can be good citizens, and hopefully, instead of creating jobs in the system, create jobs outside the system for them to get so they don't have to get caught up in.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they got caught up into in the first place. So this isn't an attack on jobs. This is trying to make people, one, just look at life a little bit differently. So some of those folks that are in the system can, in the private sector, get jobs to deal with drug treatment, you know, which will create something over there. So we're taking them off the public payroll and just putting them on another payroll, and now they're paying taxes, still paying taxes throughout the system. So I don't really have a question other than I'm just trying to, I think what the department and what we're looking at is the best for all of us as we go forward.
And so just 2 points on that, and mm-hmm. one is, you know, your first point about, you know, $5 a day versus $60 a day. And I hear what you're saying, but what I'm questioning, and I think what some of the members of the commission are questioning, is how real is the $5, right? So what we determined was the $5 represents the cost of the bracelet. But, for example, the introduced budget called for a dramatic cut in parole staff. Now, it's not clear whether that part of the corrections budget is going to go forward. Even in the absence of that huge cut to parole, if there are going to be thousands more people out on electronic monitoring under this proposal, I don't think the department can say with a straight face that they're going to have monitoring happen through our regular parole staff. That's what was just said, but does that really make sense, that the parole staff are going to be able to provide that monitoring?
And I guess,
what are the costs of that?
Well, and that's why I put it in the box of 5 times 12 is 60.
Right.
So we have a lot of ground to make up, even if it's $20, $30,
well,
$40,
right.
It's still
right.
not $60 that we're spending. So there is a savings no matter what the other cost.
But don't we have to determine what the other costs are first before we say there's a savings? The other part, I raised in my testimony that I'm most concerned about is, where are the services for folks who are on electronic monitoring?
And this is how everything sort of commingles, because this is the same conversation we're having dealing with the closures of Tinley Park or the other mental mm-hmm. health centers.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, put the services in the community, put them back into the private sector. And it doesn't become a cost to the state necessarily, but we are still creating jobs because these people are still trained individuals. So instead of being the overseer, the whip cracker in this institution, they're now delivering services in the private sector.
Right. Well, and I would say, I think you're going to hear testimony today from folks who do deliver services in the ATCs, our members. And I don't think the perception is that they are whip crackers. I think the perception is they're helping people move forward with their lives. And what I'm saying is, if we say, oh, we're going to leave it up to the community to take care of that, you're going to have a lot of people on electronic monitoring with nothing. Because as we all know, I'm sure you hear from the human service agencies out there, we represent folks who work for private sector human service agencies. They're under tremendous strain. And in the absence of more resources from the state, I don't see that they're going to be able to jump up and provide services.
And that's what we're
but
doing.
But there's nothing in here about those funding for the community to deliver those services.
Well, we are shifting stuff, and they say we're shifting it. We no longer, we being the state, no longer wants to be the employer. So we are shifting services and shifting dollars with those services. We're not cutting everything. And so, as you said, $5 just is the physical aspect of the cost that has been at least articulated by the department. But we are shifting dollars. We are shifting. The state of Illinois never should have been an employer in the first place. And we did that when we were actually being tough and being stupid on crime and created this position. When you say they're not whip crackers, there's always a whip cracker, and those are jobs. So now they just have to be retrained to deliver.
But I would say, to your point about the shift of money into the community, I'm hearing your concern that individuals who are on electronic monitoring, you want them to get services. You don't want them to just sort of sit there and wait. I would say to you, I would be asking for, is there funding to serve those folks? Because in this proposal, there is no money to serve those folks. It's not like there's money being shifted from the ATC into community services. That's not what's on the table. And if I'm right and you're wrong, it means folks are going to be left without services.
And that's what we have to figure out, and that's why we're having the hearings.
Right.
So and we still have time, and that's how the appropriation process works.
Right. So all I'm asking is that we have an apples-to-apples comparison. If we're saying 55 versus 60, what does the 5 represent? What's not represented in the 5? What are the services here on the 60 side that aren't being delivered when you're talking about
$5? What is the real cost? And I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying we do have some flexibility is all I'm trying to look at it from my standpoint.
Uh-huh.
But so I thank you for that dialogue, and there's going to be continued dialogue to that effect.
Okay.
But again, we're not trying to run people out of jobs. We just don't want to be the jobber at this point, and that's how because we also have to look at not only what we're paying you today, and when we say everything is commingled, we also have to look at what is the hit on pensions, because there is a long-term cost to all of this that we as legislators have to really think through. So it's not just the job today, it's what we're paying tomorrow. So we're trying to address all of that.
True, but obviously people will lose jobs under the current proposal. So it seems before we make that leap that you as legislators would want to know what's the full cost, right? Because if there's pain being inflicted on people unnecessarily, we would want to avoid that pain. And that means pain in terms of people not getting services they need to move on with their lives, and it means pain in terms of people losing their jobs, because that's real pain too.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just following up on Senator Nekritz's point with regard to, you know, the alternative. And revenue was the answer. I think it's worth noting that before the tax increase, we were coming off the 5 best revenue years the state had ever had. And then on top of that, we build in a $7 billion tax increase. So, you know, we've never seen revenue like the revenue we have now, and yet the answer is more revenue. And I'm wondering, in what form has it been proposed that we, the General Assembly, raise revenue again by those who are advocating for more revenue.
So I wasn't prepared today to discuss
the
broader
plan
revenue
out there, though?
Plan. I'm happy to have Joanna Webb-Govin, our legislative director, follow up with you.
Are you aware, though, of there being a plan?
I know something I'm sure Henry has brought to your attention is he believes, just as we deferred our wage increases 2 years in a row, that the corporations should defer their tax reductions. There are a lot of ideas out
there.
What
tax reductions have they got? We just raised their taxes.
Well, there was a significant, certain corporations benefited from significant special tax deals. And why would they not defer those, given the dire consequences to our state when we make tremendous service cuts like are being proposed right now?
We were kind of hoping that they would stay here and continue to employ people, which under the terms of the agreement they did. I think we're going to have an even bigger hole if these people decide to leave. But, I mean, so how much money is that? I mean, it's not that much money in the context of
Again, of
the problems we're talking about here. I mean, is there a proposal out there for another tax increase?
Again, I'm happy to have Joanna Webb-Govin follow up with you. I wasn't coming here today to discuss revenue. I was coming here today.
I understand that, but it's for those of us who go, and you know, we had it last week mentioned to us, you know, cut everywhere but here. And, you know, here is always wherever we are that day. You know, these things are going to have to happen. I mean, we have far and away record revenue coming into the state government, and we're still within this fiscal year running a deficit. There are going to need to be fundamentally different approaches to how this state government operates, because the revenue tree isn't sprouting any new money anytime soon. And I think the sooner everybody gets their arms around that and comes up with solutions within where we are, the easier it's going to be for us to transition, as you suggest, constructively into whatever comes next for what state government is.
Well, but you have to also keep in mind, when you're talking about state government, again, you're addressing this in terms of state employees because you're talking to AFSCME.
Right.
You have to remember the fact, it's a hard fact, that Illinois has, depending on the year, we're either the lowest or tied for the lowest per capita state employees. So, again, in terms of what's the problem, those numbers would tell you the problem isn't we have too many state employees.
I don't know that we necessarily reach that. We need to reach that conclusion to similarly conclude, though, that we are spending far too much money, right? I mean, if we're spending more money than we're taking in after a $7 billion tax increase, we clearly have a problem with our spending that has to be addressed. And whether or not you're the primary problem or not, it seems that everybody is going to be part of the solution. And back to Representative Neckert's point, the more ideas we get on how to operate within the money we have, I think the more constructive it is to reaching a solution that is the most tolerable outcome that we can achieve.
I just want to put a point on what Senator Murphy said, though I have a slightly different interpretation of it. All the revenue that came as a result of raising the income taxes has gone to make the pension payment in its entirety and to pay for the group health insurance, which because of that escalating cost had not been funded in its entirety previously. So the revenue for that is not necessarily going to new programs or to add new people to existing programs, but rather to pay for pensions, to ensure that they have greater financial stability, and to pay for the group health insurance. Both of those items directly impact the individuals who are not only employed at Westside Adult ATC, but at every single facility from throughout the state where we've been having these hearings as well. Are there any other members of the commission who wish to seek recognition? Thank you. We'll move on to agenda item number 5. Mr. Flood.
Mr. Chairperson,
please proceed.
Senators and representatives, thank you for the opportunity to provide some testimony today. I am a former resident of Westside ATC. I did 2 years of a four-year sentence at 50%. It is my only offense in my life, so it's been quite the experience for me. And I'm here to explain from my perspective how the ATC helped me reestablish myself in a world that I had no experience in. I will refer to my notes because it's been my experience also that hair loss, loss of vision, and rambling are directly correlated. So I won't talk about taxes or revenue.
You can feel free to do that as well. Please proceed.
Although I do have from my experiences some observations of what might be a way to deal with some of the issues you talked about, but that's a whole other day. I came from a law enforcement family and never, ever thought about prison until I was in it. And my perspective on things changed drastically. What I experienced at Westside ATC, different than what I experienced in prison, was in prison, I was warehoused. That's what we do. That's all they really have time to do as officers. Their job is to keep you safe, them safe, and have as minimal disruptions as possible so that when your time is done, you can get out. Now, there are programs in place, and I understand that, and I'm not discounting them. In fact, there's some initiatives to try and help you get out when you get out that some of the wardens at Stateville have been doing, much to their credit. But there is a huge difference in the world between saying what you'll do and proving what you'll do. And at the ATC, you have the opportunity to take small steps and reestablish trust and show people who you have violated their trust what you can do. You can't do that any other way. When you get out of prison, you get out and you have a black jumpsuit, tennis shoes, and whatever is in your plastic bag. When you come out of an ATC, you have had a chance to receive some education. You learn how to read. See, some of these poor people, they don't even read. You have the opportunity to do things with your life. What I received out of Westside is I have progressed enough in my life through the assistance of the officers at Westside that I am now the facility manager for the new Salvation Army building on 119th and Racine, the Joan and Ray Kroc Center. I'm only one of 17 people in the country who get to do that. It's an amazing thing to me that because I had guidance along the way, that I was able to do that. Some of these people have nowhere to go. They can't do electronic monitoring. They've violated the trust of their families and their communities. They can't read. They've never looked at a job. They're not afraid of prison. My experience is you learn quickly how to do prison. They don't refer to it as prison. They refer to it as the world, which is outside the wall, but they never refer to it as prison. They know how to do prison. They don't know how to do the world. And if there isn't a way to take people step by step, just like you raise children, and I don't mean that in a belittling way to any of these adults, they can't get there. They don't know how. And if you really are interested in continuing to change behavior and lower recidivism and give people an opportunity to become productive members of society, you need to help show them how, and through the Transition Center, that's what it does. I would like to thank the state of Illinois for giving me the opportunity to go through that experience. It's not the path I would have chosen. However, I chose not to go back to Arizona for my sentence. I chose not to go to Iowa for my sentence. I chose to stay in Illinois because I knew that I had put a strike against me, and the only way that I was going to re-enter the world was to go through a program. You're the only state that had that. I would like to thank the officers at Westside who helped me learn that just the decision I made did not have to be who I was. That who I was how I chose to define myself in the future, not the error I had made. And there's a whole world of people who haven't made that error. And to them, I give my commendation. But for those who have, who really want to make a difference, this center helped me as well as others that I've seen. And I would be happy to answer any questions that people have. I do have the unique experience of having swum in the ocean that I didn't intend to. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Representative Nekritz.
Thank you, Mr. Flood. And it was exactly your experience that led me to ask the question I asked about alternatives. Are there, you know, and we need the people inside the system to help us identify these alternatives, because it would be my preference to try to scale these things back. We do have to make some cuts. We have to make some difficult decisions. It'd be my preference to try to do it in a different way, but I need the help of those inside who are working in that system to help us identify those opportunities. So I appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
I understand that completely. You have very well-meaning people who want to try, but they're bigger dollars than I choose to deal with. The last time I chose with big dollars, it didn't turn out so well for me.
Representative Ford.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Representative Ford from the west side of Chicago, and thank you for your testimony. Is it possible to become reformed in prison? You know, you have the center and you have the prison. Is it possible to be reformed in prison?
My opinion, from my observations of having been in that for 2 years, is that you need to draw a distinction. There is the ability to be reformed in what you want to do. But when you get out of prison, if you haven't had a chance to do something different, you go back to the same place, to the same neighborhood. You still haven't done anything different. You've been around people who have been doing the same things. You haven't had a way to change your behavior in a practical way.
So thanks for answering the question the way I asked. Is it possible to be a productive citizen leaving prison? Do you have a better chance at being a productive citizen leaving a center, or a better chance of being a productive citizen leaving a prison?
Oh, without a doubt, leaving a center. You've had to have the discipline to do what you do in the world and voluntarily take yourself back to prison every night, knowing you're giving up your freedom. That's a huge step in responsibility.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
We're going to go to agenda item number 6, and then we'll go back to agenda item number 3. So the panelists for agenda item number 6, Brenda George, Amina Wareth, LaVon Borders, Randall McFarland, and Chaplain Gilliam. Is there anyone here, while they're coming forward, who's here on behalf of Congressman Danny Davis? Okay. Whenever you're all settled in, please identify yourselves for the record and proceed. Good morning.
Good morning. Should I begin?
Please.
Okay. I'll read my statement. Too many of the offenders who come to us have no concept of what it is to live legal. They've been involved for too long in situations where breaking the law is okay.
Pardon me, could you hit the button on your microphone?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay,
perfect.
These offenders are going to be released back into our communities. At Westside, we house them in a controlled environment that prepares them for return to society, giving them the tools necessary to function so they can avoid criminal behavior. Now, DOC says it would be cheaper to close ATCs and release some offenders onto the electronic monitoring system. Now, I don't know exactly if those numbers are correct, but what I do know is that we have well-trained, experienced staff at Westside, and the work that we do with the offenders can't be replaced by the electronic bracelet. We provide the structure and guidance necessary to direct these individuals from incarceration to the community through the in-house and community-based programs. We work to reform the offender's thinking patterns to promote positive behavior. Offenders may have social, environmental, or mental health concerns that feed anger issues and low self-esteem. They have histories of drug addiction and gang activity. At our program, we provide counseling and daily discussion on where they have gone wrong in the past. We give them direction and information on how to get back on track, including the medical care, substance abuse counseling, and the family reunification. Many of our offenders have a history of being academically low-functioning, high school dropouts or kickouts. Some of these guys have never even filled out a job application. They don't have a state ID, a birth certificate, or a Social Security card. We enroll them in academic programs, employment preparedness programs, vocational training. We give them job placement assistance and training on budget management. Westside provides all this for the sake of improving the offender's sense of worth, to empower them to be able to navigate in society to get what they need and also to get what their families need. Now, this helps the ex-offender, but it also helps our communities. Think about an ex-offender who returns to the community with employment, job skills, and the savings that he has made while working at the ATC. Now, think of that same offender if all he has is a release document, bus fare, and electronic monitoring to help him go home. Okay, so who's more likely to reoffend? Okay, so of course, the ATC is not a cure-all for criminal behavior, but it's definitely a positive start. The ATC resident has a better chance of avoiding criminal behavior by using the tools that we gave them. So we don't want to risk our community's safety or lives just to save a buck. So I think we should continue to invest in reform and also invest in the ATC.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, my name is LaVon Borders. I work at Westside ATC. I'm also, I've been with the Department of Correction now for going on close to 32 years. So I'm a product of Jesse Ma Houston. Also, I'm a product of Dwight Correctional Center, so I have a long history in corrections. We need our ATCs in order to reduce the recidivism rate here in Illinois. When a person come out of prison, they're scared. Basically, they don't know where they're going. Far as coming out of prison setting, they're living in more of a structured environment. But when they come to us, we kind of break them out of that. We turn them to we allow them. Once they come through our program, they go through an orientation procedure. We teach them far as how to get their IDs, jobs, how to apply for housing. And not only that, to bring back that family unification far as the family and their children. The ATC program shows them how to do all these things before they get out. We build a foundation for them so they can feel supported when they leave. For some of the men, hustling and street life is all they know. They don't know how to live a lifestyle that is related to the criminal, element. If they leave prison and go back to the street, and going back to their old lifestyle is the easy thing. And our community pays the price, and that's something we want to stop. But if they go through our facility, which is Westside ATC first, before they hit the street, they get a taste of what it feels like to live a natural lifestyle. We connect them to jobs for the first time. For some of them, this is their first real job as far as in their life. Then we help them to budget their earnings, including paying school percentage, rent to the state. And also when a guy comes to our program, that 20% goes back to the state. So they're still paying into it, as well as saving money to be able to help their families. Not only that, we provide education parts, GED, and college. We give them classes in parenting, anger management, relationship building. And most importantly, our biggest piece is substance abuse. The men who do most of these things outside the facility, working at a construction site or a fast food restaurant or going to a community college. They're still in a structured environment. We monitor them. That is what our job is at Westside ATC as a residence counselor, which I am. I'm a part of that security force. I make sure that they check in and out. We make sure they go where they're supposed to go. If they're running late, they know to notify us this and that and the other. They are still in a structured environment where we monitor their whereabouts, but they get back into society. We ease them back into society. We assist them before they go out on parole. We teach them to make good decisions before returning to a community. Our state prisons have seen program cuts such as education, counseling, job training. The ATCs are the best chance we have left of turning that life around. Please stand up for that second chance and oppose this closure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Westside opened in 1993 as a community work center combined with SISU parole. We lease the facility for the purpose of a male facility center. We service electronic detention release fees. The parole supervisors were housed there, as well as the parole agents in this one facility. And in 1994, the director decided to make a co-ed for females. So on the part of the building called Wing 4, we house females. It was the female ATC in the Chicago area at that time. It was successful for 6 years. In 2000, they made the decision to transfer females to Fox Valley ATC. In doing so, of course, it dislocated the female offenders from their families and children living in the west and south side of Chicago. And this is going to go right to as far as a point being made. In understanding the effectiveness of the electronic detention program and implementing it, $5 a day for each offender probably. There's a factor I would like to address, and that is this, and that is no one talking about it, but the impact on the community of the community. Community impact. And what I mean by that is that, of course, I'm thinking that this is going to be a continuous release of electronic monitoring into the community. What community is going to affect? This is probably maybe Rosen, Chatham, Evanston, West Side, South Side, Eaglewood. And are we going to notify the community of this? And of their housing, and how are we going to be housed? Who are we going to notify? We notify the landlord, the lease holder, and what drawback can we get from this? So I would say that in my own experience of this, I was living in a neighborhood where there was one that I didn't know was going to try marketing, and he was standing in front of the building, a courtway building. And he's standing there, and I said, why not be every day in front of the building going nowhere? Well, he was smart enough to do this. He was living on the first floor, had the box plugged into the window by the front of the building. He used himself outside the window. They would stand outside within an appropriate range, maybe, what I think is 100 feet. And at the evening time, he'll have his friends, his relatives come by and visit. And of course, he had the complaints from the neighbors, homeowners, about what was going on at that building. So if we have how many, maybe one multi-unit building, or one city block, or one neighborhood, what kind of attraction on the negative side will we get from this electronic detention release fee? Will he go back into the old habit? Will he go back to drug trafficking, which brings the problem of gang affiliation? What are we going to do to warn the community about electronic detention release fees coming into the community? So I would suggest, really suggest, that we allow one state facility, Department of Corrections, state facility, to remain open to address the issues related to those problems that may occur. Westside also housed lost home site electronic detention releases. In other words, the issues that come up with electronic detention, malfunction of the box, equipment, family argument where maybe the mother or family member say, you know, get out. Get out. Where does he go? Well, he will go to Westside. Lost home site, offenders on electronic detention who lose their home site would return to Westside. That's where they would be housed. And that was one of the purposes of Westside being open. It's an ATC center and also service electronic detention clients. So, in closing, I'd like you to take that into consideration. I know it's a budget issue about closing down
but we should have one standalone Department of Corrections facility in the city of Chicago open to service those issues that will arise from electronic detention policing. That's your lost hope sign, that's your argument, that's your constant violators of the program. In other words, you didn't move it and they keep violating, they never come back on time, or they're being picked up. So if they're not directed back to the prison, then we direct it back to Westside.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Randall McFarland. It's a pleasure to be speaking before you. My career started off at Stateville Correctional Facility. I'm 18 and a half year state employee. Always visualize having an audience like this, not under these circumstances, but under different circumstances, such as maybe each one of you attended one of our residents college graduation, or probably visiting our facility to attend IGD graduation, or possibly coming to shake the hand of one of our 18 to 24 young men who never worked before after he attained his first job. I prepared a speech, a long speech. I looked at videotapes to practice all weekend. I saw the Ten Commandments, watched Killer Mockingbird. There was a lot of things that I wanted to say to you, and my intent was to make you not sleep at night. I want to say things that would resonate with you, no matter if you live in Hazelcrest, Palatine, Westmont, Evanston, whether you live in Cairo, Springfield, no matter where you live at in the state of Illinois, we have crime going on. We have people being hurt. And it's not going down. Now, all Department of Correction offenders at parole don't parole out and commit crimes. We know this. But at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves, what have we done? All of us, even you, have to ask ourselves, what have we done to ensure that this young man or this young woman do not resort to the life of crime again? Now, as far as myself, my career started for Stateville. I was hired by Director Gudina's right here, a man I do respect. One thing I always admired about him is that he always had compassion and felt programs was a needed thing for our residents. Currently, I work at Westside ATC. I've seen the different transformations of residents. Our biggest battles sometimes come down to the mind, changing a format. We've fought many battles at Westside ITC with our young men. One of the biggest is the saggy pants syndrome. I'm pretty sure you're all familiar with that. When we discuss stuff like that, that's just one of the issues, but that's a mindset that we have to transform. Now, many of my coworkers sitting back here, I'm proud to say that as state employees, I'm not sure what your impression of us, of what the media portrayed us to be or who you know, but there's many of us sitting back here have volunteered on our days off to ensure that the residents attended functions, special events. We have different Chicago world-renowned institutions that extend complimentary passes to us, such as the Black Ensemble Theater, the ETA Theater. Our annual Black History Month, we always have the Muntu African Dance Theater come and perform for our residents, or the Nijiwa Dance Theater out of Malcolm X College. All of this at no charge at our state. These are institutions that believe in Westside ATC, they believe in our program, and they understand that it's a team effort. The recidivism rate, that's for you to debate and haggle. The numbers goes up and down according to what argument you're on. My question is, the argument comes down to electronic monitoring versus adult transition centers right here. Now, my question is, how many offenders are currently on electronic detention right now? And what is the success rate? I'm not sure if we have numbers like that to compare. I know one person who failed. This young man right here was on electronic monitoring. Excuse me. He was on electronic monitoring. And he actually got out. He was on ED. And he ended up killing a police officer by the name of Michael Flicks. Also, he ended up killing this young man who's married to a friend of mine. This happened 2 years ago. This is a young man who's on electronic monitoring. He tried to steal my friend's husband's car. When the Chicago police officer came out to take fingerprints, he felt as though he didn't want to go back to jail. This is a young man that was not working, didn't have his GED. All of this he was doing his own because he's on electronic monitoring. If he was in our facility, he would have had no choice. We insist and we mandate that you progress. So that being said, that's why I'm not a big fan of electronic monitoring, because it's easy for our young men and young women to get around the rules and regulations. Here's a success story. This is Jonathan Romain. This is a perfect example of a success of transitional store facility. I'm sorry. This is Jonathan Romain. He came through Department of Correction, went through the transition. Currently, he owns an art gallery. He's a great painter. Owns an art gallery in Peoria. If you look at that picture, he's on there with President Clinton. The Black Lawyer Association commissioned and paid him to do a painting of President Clinton playing the saxophone. And that's him presenting that painting to the former president. That's a transition success story, and there's many more. Now, I can equate success in many ways. But confirmation for me, myself, is when I get a phone call. I work night shift, 11 to 7. And all 11 to 7 shift don't go to sleep, just so everybody know that, okay? If I get a phone call 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning from a former resident, a young guy that swore he hated our facility, I get a phone call from this guy 5 years later, and he's telling me that he's married now, got kids, he's working, went to school. How do you put a price tag on that? How do you put a price tag on that? He's not out there hurting people, robbing and being a predator, which is what we teach our men, that you're not a predator for the community. You're supposed to protect in the community. So I'm sorry if I had deviated from my speech. I heard this buzzer beeping about 30 times. But
no, that's all right. In fact, if you do have prepared remarks, if the other witnesses have prepared remarks, we will put it on our website with all the other testimonies so that others can see it.
Okay, so I just wanted to give you a heartfelt opinion. You guys got a tough decision to make. Hopefully I made your night tonight less restful, and you got a lot more to consider. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Pardon me, Chaplain Gilliam.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm speaking on behalf of not only the residents, but the staff as well. Our job in the chapter's department is twofold, to help have some accountability for the residents, not only for themselves, but to their family and community. This job actually comes with the help of the ATC workers through their various programs. There has to be some type of personal accountability. I think the young man, Mr. Flood, alluded to the fact that he has to leave the facility and be worthy enough and conscious enough to have enough honor and integrity to bring himself back. Those kind of instilled thoughts don't come notoriety just by hearsay. There's a practice. And so the chapter department have a lot of community churches that we evolve in. And one of the biggest goals is, as you're aware, we're living in this generation of lost fathers, or our absent sons. Sons are most likely going to repeat the sins of their fathers. I was talking to a gentleman who was incarcerated, and you know what he called penitentiary? He called it a vacation. I mean, I would like to be a lot of places on vacation. Penitentiary is not one of them. And just to kind of give you the kind of mindset of the people you're dealing with, he allowed his son to sell narcotics. And I just asked him, if his son gets arrested, what would you say? And his comment was, that's on him. The guys or the men that you may be placing back at homes, some of the families may not be welcome to that idea. They may go along for a while, but after a while, chaos may come. Here's the problem. If we don't create through the ATCs a fundamental principle of accountability, not only with their family, not only to the community, we're going to lose an individual. Most likely he'll go back out there and be a repeat offender again, and he will wind up at a state penitentiary. So what we're trying to do is deter that fact. And there's a program that we use called MAPS. MAPS is just, the acronym is just Mentoring a Precious Soul. That's where we see them, a precious soul. Now, the difference is this. If we treat them as an inmate, they'll behave like one. But we rather them to be more productive in community, so we have to treat them as a person. And here's one of the things that, as I close, that we should think about. When we talk about home monitoring, there's a lot of things that could go wrong. There's not many things that can go wrong in an ATC supervised area. But you leave that type of individual at home, leave them to their own thoughts, their own imaginations, without supervision or minimum supervision. There are some things that could go wrong. I mean, we talk about clever criminals. We're talking about people that are able to sell out of their houses and still wear the home monitoring system. By the time it comes for a drop, they'll be clean. So we want to, for the community's sake, try to create an environment that's, if I can say this here, not so detrimental to their behalf. But we have kids in our community, kids that go back and forth to school. And some of the guys are not ready to be in the community. And they're better yet set at ATC where they can get these fundamental principles. And with that said, I thank you again for having me at your hearing.
Thank you. Are there any questions for any of the panelists? We appreciate your time and your testimony today. And as I said, if you have prepared statements, if you could leave a copy with us, we'll make sure it goes on the website with all the other testimony for the hearing. Yes, Chaplain.
Have you saw the picture Trading Places, Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd? Well, pretty much that's what we're discussing here, Trading Places, pretty much. You know, I just wanted to leave that thought with you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We have additional witness slips from three other individuals, and then if it's all right, then I'd like to come back to agenda item number three for Representative Ford to wrap things up. I saw that Senator Collins had been here sooner, but I believe she's left. So why don't we do that? We have Margaret Davis, Felix Rodriguez, and Dr. Terry Solomon. If you could all please come forward.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Name is Margaret Davis, and I'm a registered nurse with a graduate degree. And I'm very opposed to the closing of the Westside ATC. One of the problems that we have with the penal system in many states is that all the penitentiaries are outside of the community of the perpetrators. And so, therefore, there is very little interaction with community and prisoners. This last 2 years, as the previous speaker, Mr. Flood, talked about, allows them to be in association with community. They have to ride the bus. They have to attend functions. One of the things that I'm involved in is the Fathers Who Care program with Congressman Danny K. Davis. And every year we have over 300 men, many from the ATC and other homeless shelters, coming out to our health promotion events. I know Senator Trotter at one time tried to have a penitentiary in Chicago, but that was defeated because everybody say, not in my backyard. Yet, over 70% of the discharged inmates go back to Inglewood and North Lawndale. we need to have these services. Now, what I would imagine, because, see, I want the dollars to go to affordable health care, okay? Now, I know it's not a lot of dollars. I mean, you got a difficult job. I feel that you should sit down with the West Side Social Service Agencies and the West Side ATC agencies and try to work out a deal that would decrease that $60 fee more close to $5. You know, it needs to be a meeting of the minds of all levels of elected officials and the community. So I am willing to participate in that because I feel that service, just like that brother talked about briefly there, you know, it is so meaningful to those guys. I see them. I live on the West Side. I see them traveling in my community, and they look good. They look wholesome, and they look sober. They look sober, and that is what we're trying to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the commission and state legislators. My name is Felix Rodriguez. I'm a program administrator with Healthcare Alternative System, otherwise known as HAS. On behalf of our chief executive officer, Marco Giacomo, our board of directors, staff, and especially our clients, we want to go on record to set our concern and dissatisfaction with the proposed closing of the WATC. HAS is the largest Hispanic behavioral health service provider in the state of Illinois. Every year, we touch the lives of over 7,000 individuals from throughout Chicago and the surrounding communities, including clients we work with at WATC. As a background, WATC provides a wide range of reintegration services focusing on full-time employment, vocational programs, along with substance abuse treatment. We, as the entity responsible for providing substance abuse treatment at WATC, are licensed by the State Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse. As many of you know, a great majority of offenders also have a substance abuse problem. To address this issue, our clients receive 15 hours per week of intensive clinical services, and we are proud to say, as a result, have been effective in providing positive outcomes. For example, during reporting period of October 1, 2010 through September 2011, please consider the following. We average serving 64 participants and each receive 15 hours of intense clinical services weekly. At least 13,661 hours of drug education programming was provided. At least 20,803 hours of group and 712 hours of individual counseling was provided. Over the 9-month period, we also conducted 161 assessments. During the same period, there was a zero rate of positive drug screens that was identified during the course of treatment. The services we offer build stronger individuals, families, and neighborhoods, as is often a bridge in allowing former offenders to reintegrate into their communities. When we host our annual alumni reunion, we hear from our clients how the services not only changed their lives, but actually motivated them to become productive and contributing members of their communities. In our opinion, the closure of WATC will only negate the positive outcomes that have been made. In the short run, the state may think it is saving citizens of Illinois monies, but the likelihood exists that cutting these services will primarily result in increasing the recidivism rate and return offenders to their communities ill-equipped to reintegrate into their communities. Furthermore, other community service organizations with little or no experience or resources in servicing these clients would be challenged to pick up the slack. Ultimately, we don't want to pay for it now, but we will certainly pay for it later. It has been firmly established by the National Institute on Drug Abuse, a federal research entity, that treatment works. Please, we urge you to reconsider how viable services we provide and the positive impact it has had on our former offenders and communities alike. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Terry Solomon. First of all, I want to say thank you for allowing us the opportunity to come before you today. My name is Terry Solomon, and I am Executive Director of the Illinois African American Family Commission. The Commission is an advocate for policies, plans, and programs that promote family preservation and strengthen African American communities. Today, I'm here to speak in opposition to closing the West Side ATC in Chicago. As you know, African Americans are disproportionately represented in Illinois correctional facilities. According to the Department of Corrections 2010 annual report, over 47,000 inmates, 57% of those incarcerated were African Americans. At the end of the fiscal year, there were approximately 28,000 parolees under the supervision of the Illinois Department of Correction. The average parole population in 2010 was 30,621. Over 50%, 15,215 returned to Cook County. The Westside ATC is a crucial stepping stone to successfully help these men, fathers, and sons return home. In 2008, the Illinois Community Safety and Reentry Commission released a report entitled Inside Out, A Plan to Reduce Recidivism and Improve Public Safety. In the report, they identify that most of the people returning from prison return to only seven communities: North Lawndale, Austin, Humboldt Park, East Garfield Park, West Englewood, Auburn, and Roseland. The commission also stressed the importance of creating logical step-down system for all prisons by assuring a system in place for all offenders to step down to lower security levels throughout their sentence, and that every effort should be made to improve their behavior and lower their risk through treatment and programming so they are safer members of their community. The commission believes that the Westside ATC Center is exactly this. It improves offenders' behavior and lower their risk through treatment and programming. Over the years, we have watched Illinois abdicate responsibility for operating state adult transition centers by closing Joliet, Jesse May Houston, Metro, and Metro. All of these facilities were located in northern Illinois. We believe closing the Westside Center will disproportionately affect African-American offenders by denying them needed services such as education, employment, and vocational training, as well as preventing reasonable access to family members and social support. When you want to ask what should be done to save dollars, I think we have to look at the front end, the front door. If we are saying that most of these offenders are low-level individuals and should not be incarcerated, then we should look at introducing a program to prevent them from coming into the state system. One of the things, when they return home, they are not prepared for the world. The world has changed since their incarceration. Many of them have not had contact with family members, and we believe the ATC provides an opportunity to reconnect them to their social support systems and also introduce them to this new world, as well as provide much of the mental health and substance abuse services. Thank you.
Any questions? Members of the commission, thank you very much. If there are no other witnesses, we'll return to agenda item. Oh, I'm sorry. At your convenience, if you could fill out one of the witness forms for the witness slips for the record, they're on the table. When you're finished, that would be great.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Chaplain Crittenden. I'm from Westside ATC as well. I'm a spiritual advisor at the center. I've been there since probably about 11, maybe 12 years. Now, we've heard some testimonies that we feel like they were pertinent to, very much so pertinent to the proposed closure. But I have some before me, a list of success stories. I keep in touch with these men on a regular basis, and I can honestly say that Westside does work. Quentin Williams, he's going to college. He's about to receive his bachelor's degree in criminology. Josh Woods is a manager for AT&T. Roger Wilson is a mechanic, and he's being certified. He attended the Green Corps program while he was at Westside. Christopher Keeling, he's written a book while at Westside, is published and is now on sale in Barnes and Nobles. Edward McClain, he's a young man who had been incarcerated all his life since he was 14. And when he left Westside, he actually called me about a little while ago. He's just finished up his parole. He's now currently looking to open up his own business. Dolfo Fuentes is another young man who just paroled out in August. He sent me a letter. He's back in school and he's working. Edward Milton is a minister in Elgin, working, been paroled for 4 or 5 years, doing very well. Rodney Feimster is working now for a radio program. David Cook, he's working for the church. He's sober now, actually, and he's been sober since he's left. He had a number of run-ins with DUIs. He's now getting his license. Actually, he's received his license, I think, last month. And he's actually paroled back to the state of Wisconsin. Ronald Diggs, he's currently working in Pittsburgh. He's a deacon at the church. He earns now roughly $16-$17 an hour. His son is a Division I college linebacker for Pittsburgh University. He drives a truck from local areas in Pittsburgh, doing quite well. Charles Jordan, Charles is working currently. He was at Westside for about, I believe, 4 years. He's now a supervisor on his job. Luis Reyes, this young man had numerous bouts with drugs. He was a drug dealer and you name it and whatever. Now he's a construction worker and he's assisting his father. And I now have two young men at the center now. One is, he's currently been working for like 4 or 5 months. He's now a manager on his job. So, and I do have others, but these are just some of the things that Westside does help these young men with. We teach them integrity and the spiritual aspect of it. They enjoy the time that we give to them. They even allow us to take them to churches, and they have a good time. And my thing is this: we can always teach them how to go to jail, but we need to teach them how to stay out of jail.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
I just wanted to say something briefly because...
Could you identify yourself, please, and fill out a witness slip when you're finished?
Sorry, I have one. Right.
Oh, good. Okay.
I've only been a resident of Illinois for a little less than 6 months.
I'm sorry, your name?
My name is Mertis Ireland.
Thank you.
And I had an experience of coming here to the state, and some of my colleagues were concerned about my moving to a state that they considered to be not safe. And so here I am here at this public hearing, and I'm a little concerned that we are making a decision that focuses more on saving dollars instead of creating a safe community. And what is the mission of a Department of Correction? I would think that it is to have a safe community, to protect the citizens, and to have some kind of reformation program for those who live outside of the law. And this is not really seeming to be the attention of the decision that you need to make. And I would hope that a statement was made that everyone has to be a part of the solution. And I agree with that. And you need to be a part of the solution also. There are lots of places where money can be found. And the other thing that I wanted to express my concern about, the speaking of turning things over to the private sector. The private sector sometimes wherever the hands are for that, they're more interested in dollars and not interested in the mission of reforming. Just listening to these people who worked at the center, who work at the center, one of the aspects of the center is that those people that they work with receive care and attention. And you have to, as this lady spoke here, where do our criminals come from? You're going to put them back into an environment that created them in the first place. And they didn't know how to problem solve then, and they won't now if they don't receive some kind of training and guidance. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Edward Emerson. I'm a shift commander at Westside.
Mr. Emerson, if you could fill out a witness slip
when
you're done. Okay, great. Thank you.
I just want to be brief. A lot was said today, but there are also some things left out. Westside is a huge work release center. It also has room for parole agents, parole supervisors. At one time we had that. If it's a money issue, the space is there to even use it for parole if they have to close another parole agent or parole office. So just to put that out, just to let you know, that's one solution.
Thank you. If there are no other witnesses, we'll go back to agenda item number 3, Representative LaShawn Ford. Representative Ford.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say, coming and growing up on the west side of Chicago, I have to be here because it's important that I speak and stand against the closing of the ATC Center. I'm against that, and I am for the electronic detention because it's not a one-size-fits-all. I mean, you have to make sure that you provide the services to the people that need them in the way that they need them. So if you're going to send someone to the adult transition center, you have to make sure that you're sending them to a place and you send people there that need reform. People that we know that come from Austin, Lawndale, Roseland, all these communities, they were cheated out of a proper education. And so now it seems so delusional that we're talking about adults that need to learn how to read, write, and do basic things in life, but they do because this very state failed to educate them. So to cut the adult transition centers in Austin or on the west side is only kicking the can down the road because we're going to continue to incarcerate the people because they're not going to get any help. So the way to do it is, one, to stop cheating the kids out of a quality education, and then we will see this problem go away. But until then, we still have citizens in this state that we have a responsibility to. And to close the adult transition center is saying that we have no responsibility to these people because we know that there's nowhere for them to turn. It was great to see John Flood, the resident, but when you look at John Flood, he said that he came from a family. He came from a family of people with opportunities probably because they were in law enforcement. And that's why he was able to receive and move forward with his life. But if you have people without the capacity, then no matter what you do, if you don't give them the safety nets that they deserve and that they are so entitled to, then they're going to continue to be a bigger burden on society. So I think that I want to thank the people from the Westside ATC Center, and I will continue to stand with you. I want to thank ASME for being a strong advocate, and I will continue to be an advocate for the people that this state owes a debt of service to. We know that it's almost impossible for a person with a background to receive a job. We know that most people that are in jail right now probably suffer and probably don't have a high school diploma. So what are we going to do? We simply ask the state to ban the box just to give people opportunity to go before the state for employment, and the state says, no, we can't ban the box. We're not guaranteeing any jobs. We're asking the state to seal certain offenses so that people could have a second chance in life. The state says no to that. So the question is, do we really care about the people, the citizens of this state? If we really care, then we're going to start educating people, and we're going to start giving people a pathway to real citizenship, citizens a pathway to real citizenship in this state. And this is one of the reasons why I'm so honored to be an elected official, because these are the social justice issues that I believe so strongly about. Because when I go home every day, I have people in my family that can't live the American dream because they have been cheated out of opportunities. So thank you all, and I will continue to fight as long as I can to make sure that we have a little more justice in the state of Illinois.
Thank you, Representative Ford. With impeccable timing, we've been joined by my dear friend, Congressman Danny K. Davis, who's in the House. Congressman, do you care to say a few words about the proposed closure of Westside ATC?
Chairman, I thank you so very much.
And then we're going to roll the credits. Have a seat. Make yourself at home.
Thank you. I certainly appreciate the courtesy. To you and other members of the committee, I am delighted to be here.
Could you turn the microphone on, Danny? If you hit the button on the
base. I think it's green here, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe my voice is just too low. No, but I really thank you so much. And I won't take any real time, because much of what I would have said, I walked in right in the nick of time, because State Representative LaShawn Ford was saying it. Representative Ford represents a portion of my congressional district, and all of the problems that he related are tantamount to many of the communities of our district where we live and where we work. It occurred to me that we are the most incarcerated nation on the face of the earth. There's no country in the world that incarcerates as many of its people as we do, proportionately to the population or in actual numbers. We incarcerate more people than China, more people than India, the biggest populations in the world. Much of that incarceration is a result of recidivism. That is, people in and out. The same people who were in this year, if they get out 3 years from now, if they don't get any help, 65-70% of them are likely to be re-entering. That is, they're back in jail, they're back in prison. Statistics show, studies show, people who work in the arena know that if you give them some help, you reduce the level of recidivism sometimes all the way down to 10%, 8% if you can help them find a job. And so I would urge you to do as I know you're going to do, and that is to simply look as hard as you can at the budgets. We are facing tough times in our country, no matter what level you're operating from, whether it's the federal government, state government, county, municipal. We have tough choices to make. We really do. I used to like going to meetings where you could talk about developing programs, and but you can't have a discussion now without thinking of how much is it going to cost, where are you going to get the money from, what's the impact. So I know that you consider all of those things. So I just ask that you consider them as carefully as you can, as you're trying to determine state priorities, as you're trying to decide how to best serve the residents and citizens of the state. And I have every bit of confidence that you will do it. And I'm just reinforcing some of what I heard my young colleague from out on the west side, Representative LaShawn Ford, say. And I thank you so much.
Thank you, Congressman. Your young colleague has a question for you. So
I just want to ask
so
you.
So the pupil wants to ask right. a question of the master.
Yeah, I mean, I was delighted. I was so happy to see Congressman Davis here. He's like the godfather, and he's a role model for me. So I was excited, and I hope I did okay. I was afraid when I saw you. But is it possible for you to print some money for us in Illinois?
I'm going to tell you, it's getting so expensive to print money until we're not doing pennies anymore in Canada, and I got a feeling we're not going to do them in the United States either. So I thank you all. Thank you all.
Thank
so
you,
very
Congressman.
Much.
We'll now proceed down to the announcements of future facility closure hearings. There's actually one today at 3 p.m., a continuation of a recessed hearing at the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. It's at South Suburban College, then we'll be at Murray Developmental Center on the 20th at 3 p.m. at the Centralia High School. They're seeing no further business before the commission. We'll now stand adjourned. Thank you.